Good morning, everybody. My name is Roger Salazar. I'm the chairman of the Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Recreation Commission. I welcome you all as I call this commission meeting to order on November 19th, 2025. The commission is conducting this hybrid meeting in person at the Spring Hill Suites by Marriott in West Sacramento, California, and virtually as we continue to allow remote public participation via Zoom. Members of the public will still be able to watch, listen, and comment via Zoom or telephone once all in-person public comments have been heard. A live broadcast of this meeting will also be available via CalSPAN. As an additional reminder to all those who choose to make public comments today, the commission does want to acknowledge that a few topics on the agenda may generate frustration and concern, but let's all be mindful of that and exhibit civility and decorum. I'm actually optimistic that that we'll all sort of reach consensus together on things and we'll work towards that end, but that's just me. Before we proceed with the agenda, please join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I would now like to ask Vicki Perez, our OHV Commission Clerk, to take roll for the Commission.
Can you hear me?
Can you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Commissioner Kat Anderson from San Francisco, California.
Present.
Commissioner Anderson, present. Commissioner Sean Flanagan from El Dorado Hills, California. Commissioner Flanagan is absent. Commissioner Tom Lemon from Ocotillo Wells.
Live from Ocotillo Wells. Present.
Commissioner Lemon, present. Commissioner Lemon, do you have anyone in the room with you over the age of 18?
Just my dog, and he's not 18 yet.
I think we're good. Thank you. Commissioner Mueller from Manteca, California.
Present.
Commissioner Mueller, present. Commissioner Ed Petrosky from Big Bear City, California.
Present.
Commissioner Petrosky, present. Commissioner Tommy Randall from San Dimas, California.
Present.
Commissioner Randall, present. Commissioner Diane Ross-Leach from Berkeley, California.
Present.
Commissioner Ross-Leach, present. Commissioner Roger Salazar from the great town of Sacramento, California.
Present.
Commissioner Salazar, present. Commissioner Patricia Urania from Calexico, California.
Present.
Commissioner Urania, present. Chair, we have a quorum. Thank you.
Thank you, Vicki. Appreciate you very much. Item two is agenda management. There are no changes to the meeting agenda. Announcements, there will not be a closed session for this meeting. As far as CalSPAN live webcast, as a reminder to everyone, this meeting is a live webcast and it can be viewed at calspan.org. An archived video of this meeting will also be available on the CalSPAN website after this meeting is adjourned. Zoom video conferencing, if members of the public attending this meeting virtually who want to comment on an agenda item during the public comment period or the comment during the public comment period for non-agenda items must register for the Zoom meeting to receive their unique meeting ID and password. A public comment speaker time. As chair of the commission, I reserve the right to reduce the speaker time during the public comment period from the originally allocated time frame, if necessary, to ensure that this meeting stays on schedule. I would like to acknowledge additional California State Parks staff who are present at this meeting. Armando Quintero, our director. Liz McGurk, our State Parks chief deputy director. Sarah Miggins, OHMVR deputy director. Kellen McLaughlin, OHMVR Chief. Jack Gorman, who is our OHMVR Assistant Chief. Alex Stell, Strategic Planning and Recreational Services Deputy Director. Catherine Tobias, Senior Staff Legal Counsel. Maribel Barajas, Legislative Affairs Deputy Director. So with that, I'd like to introduce Armando Quintero to deliver our California State Parks Director for his opening remarks.
Good morning, Commissioners and Chair, and all the State Park staff and the members of the public who are joining us here today, both in person and virtually. I want to start out by saying happy OHV Safety Week. 5 years ago, the California Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Recreation Commission passed a resolution dedicating 1 week each year to promote safe and responsible off-highway vehicle practices. We are currently in the middle of OHV Safety Week, which began on Saturday, November 15th, and continues to Sunday, November 23rd. You know, I'd like to just mention that whenever we have, you know, like a Heritage Month acknowledgement or week-long programs like a Safety Week for OHV, our intent really is to create a sensibility that this lasts throughout the year, because that's really what we need with OHV. For those of you who are OHV riders, you know how important safety is. And for those of us who are occasionally OHV riders, but also manage or watch the news on what's happening in OHV areas, safety is a really critical issue. As stewards of public lands, the week encourages all riders to ride responsibly and respectfully so that the future generations can enjoy the same off-roading adventures and protect these amazing areas. The incredible staff of the OHV program has put on a robust week with educational programs, poker rides, community outreach efforts at various state vehicular recreation areas. Riders of all ages are encouraged to participate and learn best practices for protecting themselves, the environment, and others on the trails. If you're new to OHV riding or even an experienced rider, several of our state vehicular recreation areas are offering free ATV, ROV, and motorcycle safety classes. And that's a statewide program, and it's a great opportunity to build off-road confidence and skills. Safety is essential for every rider, whether on motorcycles, in ATVs, side-by-sides, or 4x4s, and I might even say those just if you're walking around in these areas. By embracing safety, we can also help ensure that California's OHV recreation areas remain fun, accessible, and sustainable for generations to come. For anyone interested in finding an activity or free riding course during the remainder of the week, visit the OHMVR division website for details. And in addition to the OHV Safety Week, I'm really excited about the division's recent awarding of just over $23 million in grant funding. Grant funding for 81 local and federal agencies, districts, and nonprofit organizations. And I'll mention here that the grants team works with applicants to make sure that their grants are as strong as possible. And there's no prejudice in the work that they do. They just want to really make sure that everybody is able to put their best foot forward. Because what we know is that oftentimes when folks are asking for additional funds, it may be in part because they don't have the capacity to get additional funds. So in all of our grants programs and parks, our teams work with the applicants to make sure that their applications are really competitive. Supporting California's Outdoors for All initiative to expand access to nature, these grants help maintain trails for OHV recreation, educate the public on safe and responsible OHV recreation. These grants help protect wildlife and property, including natural and cultural resources. These funds also help restore and repair habitat damage from both illegal and legal OHV use and just other acts of nature. I know many of us have been out in the wild and we've seen what can happen with major floods or fires or just natural tree fall. The division's grant teams will provide more about this funding later in the meeting. And in closing, I'd like to thank our Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Recreation Division team for preparing today's agenda. And your commitment to the department, the commission, and the public is always deeply appreciated. I know by the leadership team at Parks and in the governor's office, the secretary's office, and certainly on the part of the public. I'd also like to congratulate Matt Teague, who recently retired as the superintendent of Northern Buttes District, which is the home to Clay Pit SVRA. Matt served the state of California for 27 years, and almost all of that was within state parks. And so finally, thank you again, commissioners, and all of the stakeholders and members of the public who are participating in person and online. Your engagement helps state parks do a better job of serving the public and the places that we all enjoy. Thanks.
Thank you, Director. Appreciate that. I'd now like to introduce Sarah Miggins, our OHMVR Deputy Director, to provide her opening remarks.
Thank you, Chair Salazar, and thank you, Boss, and happy OHV Safety Week to all of you. I wanted to recognize that we also have Deputy Director of Marketing and Communications here, Marty Greenstein. Welcome, Marty, and his team that helped to promote our meetings. We've got our team from Prairie City here, SVRA leadership, along with a number of our leadership from division. So I encourage all of you when we take breaks to say hello and check in. And Catherine wants to recognize you, Kevin Murphy. Thank you so much for being at every one of these meetings and posting and taking images of all of us. So with that, I do have a brief video that I thought was really cool that I saw yesterday. Callan sent it over to me, celebrating Safety Week. It's coming. Okay. All right.
It's giving trouble now. Exactly. What is going on?
They're getting it now. I even know some people who put up their Christmas trees already.
Well, that I'm for.
So, are you for that already? Get it up. Get it up early.
I put it up in August if I could.
Get that thing up.
Sorry.
All right. Here we go. Off Highway Vehicle Safety Week. I had no idea about this, Scott, but it came to us the other day, and we figured, hey, we got to do this. We have to Zoom. We got to Zoom with a couple guys that can't be here right now. We're talking about Dwayne Taylor, John Cunningham, wherever they are. We're going to bring them in right now, hopefully, and we will chat
pull
with them
in.
At some
pull
point.
Pull them into the show. Pull them in. Are they? Oh, wait.
We have them yet?
Maybe you and I get to.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, now we're talking.
All right. So is this Dwayne or is this John?
This is John.
All right, John, good to see you out there. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good, good.
We're doing great, man. All right, we got to hear Off Highway Vehicle Safety Week. We see the vehicles there. I think we understand a little bit what's going on, but break it down for us.
So this year's event, it goes through November. It's each SVRA within the state's having an event associated with Safety Week. SVRA is a state vehicular recreation area. We have free training for ATVs, dirt bikes, and ROVs. We're also trying to infuse the culture of respecting the other users and the environment while riding your OHV.
Yeah, we don't think about that, Scott. We're out there, we're cruising through the woods. We got to be careful of the environment as well, too. We don't want to be, you know, running over and, sure. You know, smashing certain things. How about some safety tips? Let's get into those right away, because when you're out there, I see you're holding a helmet now. We got to be safe when we're out there in the dirt and in the woods.
Absolutely. So if you're going to take a training course, you're going to ride on the weekends, it's paramount to wear a DOT compliant or approved helmet, gloves, goggles, boots, long pants, long sleeve shirts, all the stuff to protect your body in the event that you might hit the ground.
Got to be protected.
Yeah.
I'm curious for people that maybe are thinking about, taking one of these out for the very first time, new riders, beginners, rookies, not like Gary or I, we are
professionals.
We're very experienced. but for the newbies, what are you saying to them?
What I'm saying to them is to go take the training. You know, if you're young, have your parents take you. If you're older and you're inexperienced, take the training. It builds the foundation for you to become a better rider over time. The training is free. It's at most of our SVRAs throughout the state. So if you go to rideohv.com or ohv.parks.ca.gov, you can find dates and locations for your ATV, dirt bike, or ROV training.
All right, it's a big week. And other things you're doing this week to celebrate it? I know you touched on it at the beginning a little bit, but other things that are going on around the state to celebrate this week?
So we're trying to put the theme out of ride to ride again. We want everyone to ride respectfully. Whether you're in the campground, the staging area, whether you're on the trails, we want you to stay to the right. Just ride with respect. Respect the environment. Stay on trail, especially with all the rain we've got. If you start riding off trail, you're going to do environmental damage that'll take years to repair. So everybody has to learn how to ride with respect.
John, do you ride all those vehicles? Are you like an enthusiast in this way? I mean, as a ranger, I'm sure you've been atop many, many vehicles, different types, but do you have one of choice that you love?
I'm a two-wheel guy. Been riding two wheels for the majority of my life, and that's my thing.
Helmets always, all the safety
always
gear.
Always helmets, always.
Absolutely, and just when you think you've got it down and you're the best, you're never the best. You can always be learning. I know that one, too, and I'm sure, John, you would say the same thing, too. Where do we go for some more information?
Again, the two websites are going to be rideohv.com or ohv.parks.ca.gov.
There it was. Came up right when you said it. John, thanks for giving everybody the information to be a little more safe and take care of the environment. That's such a good call. Like, I don't know. Never occurred to me.
There's certain protection.
I just want people to be safe. Like, don't crash and be safe,
right.
Wear the right stuff. But, like.
Well, just like when we're on the golf course, there's certain areas where I hit my ball all the time. It says, don't go in and get it because that's a safe area.
And then you go in.
Okay, we're ready to move on.
Thanks again. Thank you. Happy holidays to you. RideOHV.com with a.
Awesome. I think it's like we were right there with Ranger Cunningham. I thought that was pretty neat. They're pretty animated in Southern California in those news stations. So thank you to the Motorcycle Industry Council and especially Vehicle Institute of America for helping make that happen and spread the word about Safety Week. Callan was just sharing with me this morning that our trainings are packed. So this is really great to hear. We'll also hear a bit more from the team. Both Jack and Luke will be reporting out on news from our visitors services and law enforcement. So with that said, I just wanted to recognize all of you. I cannot believe that this is the final commission meeting of 2025. I'm sure you would all agree, where in the heck did this year go? This has been the fastest one of my life, and I can just hear my 80-year-old dad telling me they're only going to get, you know. Anyway, you all hear it too. So with that said, I also wanted to, you know, say thank you to our chair, Salazar, for your leadership over the last, well, several years, but as chair, and Ed Petrovsky as well as vice chair. I know that we have elections on the agenda today, and I haven't heard much buzz about that, so I'm really curious what's going on up there. So I look forward to continuing our work together, no matter who is leading up there. So you're all great leaders. So with that also said, since our last meeting, everyone is aware that there have been a couple public meetings, including one last night, where we heard testimony for, I think, over 6 hours in regards to concerns of a solar development next to Prairie City, SVRA. So I just wanted to let all of you know that the County of San Bernardino last night got San Bernardino on the brain always. Anyway, County of Sacramento, right where we're sitting, did approve unanimously the project. So as you all know from our last meeting and just communication in between, we are working with both the county and the developers. So there's, you know, quite a bit of work that remains there, and we'll be learning more in the coming days. So I just wanted to bring that to all of your attention, and we'll continue to provide updates probably through the first quarter of next year. In addition to that, just a quick update from our environmental compliance unit. In late August, we approved and adopted the Oceano Dunes and Onyx Ranch Wildlife Habitat Protection Plans. We'll send out a message or two and remind you that the draft Carnegie SVRA Resource Management Area Environmental Impact Report is expected to be posted for public review later this winter. And the resource management area, also known as RMAs, is a program, a landscape level rehabilitation and sustainable trail building model implemented by our SVRA. So again, the EIR analyzes the impacts of the program, and when finalized, will allow our staff at Carnegie to continue to implement the RMA-related projects. So with that, that's all I have for now. And again, thanks for everybody that's here in person and online.
Thank you, Deputy Director. I appreciate that. It's now time for us to hear public comments for non-agenda items. I'm going to begin by calling the names of those who have submitted comment cards for this item in person. And then after all the in-person comments have been heard, the staff's going to call the names of virtual participants who have raised their hand on Zoom. So I'll call each participant's name, and they'll have 3 minutes to make their comments. First person on the list is Don Amador.
morning, commissioners. Yes, it has been a busy year. Just have one issue I want to talk about. It's not on the.
Let's start over there.
Okay. Don Amador, representing MIC and Quiet Warrior Racing. Want to say, agree with Deputy Director about this being a very busy year. I think we all can agree there. Just have one issue I want to talk about that's not on the agenda. As most of you know, the Sacramento County Board of Supervisors voted 5-0 to approve the Coyote Creek Solar Project last night. And I just have a couple comments. It was a 5-hour public comment period. 150-200 people had comments to make. I first want to thank the commission and parks for being engaged in this issue. I know you all have been working on it and sending that letter in. State park rangers have been played an important part. And I'm also proud of the strong OHV conservation group coalition that formed when we first found out about this in April. I think it's makes a very powerful statement when both of those groups come together and say that, not that we disagree with solar projects, but we disagree where it's being sited. And I think that's what we've been very consistent on. So last night, I just have a couple of pull quotes from the meeting. There was one person called it a trilogy of tragedies. Another person called it a flaming dumpster fire. I don't disagree with that. And one of the first projects that they've seen where project proponents claim that they have to destroy the environment to save it. I've never seen that before, but this project makes that claim. And I think that this battle is not over yet. There's still agencies that have to approve this, federal agencies. Parks has to sign off on this. And I just want to close by saying, you know, I've been involved in a lot of federal planning efforts, and I've never seen the level of disrespect shown by the proponents to Native American tribes. I think we had 5 or 6 tribe representatives speaking and stating that they were ignored and disrespected. And I know if this had been a federal project, the proponents would be fired. But instead, they're exonerated. They're held up as paragons of virtue. I've never seen that before. So I just implore you to stay engaged. Take a look. If you have approval authority, maybe you don't want to sign that approval. And continue to battle, which we're going to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Will Harris.
Will Harris, member of the public. The mechanical beach rake is used on many public beaches to clear potentially harmful debris, such as glass and metal, from recreation areas of sand. The typical beach rake is about 10 feet wide and pulled by a tractor. It has 2 sets of rotating metal tines that extend into the sand. One set of tines brings buried debris to the surface, and the other set lifts debris from the surface to a sifting hopper that trails the beach rake. It's fair to say that the process fluffs the sand to a depth of 6 inches or more as the rake cleans the sand of debris. In 2018, the OHMVR division purchased one of these rakes to use at Oceana Dunes. It costs about $180,000. Unfortunately, it has not been used for its intended purpose. In May 2024, the APCD's Scientific Advisory Group, or SAG, used the beach rake to determine if the machine's raking action would affect the dust emissive potential of the sand at Oceano Dunes. For that investigation, 2 side-by-side areas were delineated, and the SAG measured the emissive potential of both areas. Then one area was raked using the machine, and the other was not. The emissive potential of both areas was then measured again. The results showed that the fluffing action of the beach rake did not affect the emissive potential of the Oceano Dunes sand. Per the SAG, the investigation results indicated that, quote, mechanical raking had no discernible effect on altering surface emissivity, unquote. But that is only the start. The fieldwork for this beach rake investigation was initiated in May 2024, just 5 days after the OHMVR Commission held its May 15, 2024 Oceano Dunes tour. Yet neither state parks nor the SAG mentioned the planned investigation to the commission at that time. State Parks is supposed to give the commission regular updates regarding Oceano Dunes and its activities associated with the stipulated order of abatement imposed by the Slo County Air District, or APCD. State Parks provided its most recent Oceano Dunes update to the commission in June 2025. That update regarded only operational information, including a report on a sandcastle building contest. State Parks did not mention activities related to the APCD, the SOA, the SAG, or PM10, and most certainly State Parks did not provide the commission with an update regarding the beach rake investigation, where, as mentioned, the SAG concluded that, quote, mechanical raking had no discernible effect on altering surface emissivity, unquote. Yet somehow, after 7+ years of trying to quantify it and counting, the SAG insists that OHV activity at Oceano Dunes does affect emissivity. Like the beach rake investigation, this whole APCD SOA mess is all fluff and no dust. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Will. Appreciate that. Rose Wynn.
Good morning, everyone. Is this on? Okay. Good morning, everyone. Good to see you all today. Rose Wynn, California Four-Wheel Drive Association's Natural Resources Consultant, here to talk about the solar development at Prairie City SVRA. And so first, I agree with everything that was shared by Don Amador. I do think it's outstanding that we have such strong unity across the OHV community. And if you've read any of our public comment letters or listened to the testimony last night, you'll notice that I was there to speak on behalf of five of our OHV organizations, who collectively represent hundreds of thousands of OHV users, tens of thousands who are which regular users, at least minimum thousands of which, but I do think there's tens when I was adding everything up, who are part of the 100,000 annual visitors to Prairie City SVRA. So our stakeholder interests in this are massive, and so I do ask for your very close attention to what we're looking forward to in the next steps. Of course, the Board of Supervisors went ahead and approved. I think it was a purely financial decision with disregard for their stakeholders in whole. But we're faced with the issue that State Parks has the discretionary choice on whether or not to grant the easement that will be required for their ingress and egress and construction and operation and maintenance of this solar development. It's unfortunate that the OHV community was left out in large from the whole scoping and planning process. State Parks took part in that, which I appreciate, but the OHV community was actually brought in at the 11th hour of the DEIR phase, and we were informed from groups outside of the OHV community. The OHMVR Commission was not able to fulfill their legally required requirement to do an OHMVR Commission hearing with the project proponents. And so this is really problematic. And as you're weighing out the decision, the discretionary decision on whether or not to grant that easement, there's flags of indicators that you're giving if you choose to go ahead and approve the easement. One is that you're choosing not to enforce the OHMVR Act, which requires for public resource code that the commission is notified and that a publicly noticed hearing is held. You're allowing that to be bypassed, and that sets precedent for how other developers and state agencies will behave towards the OHV commission in the future. You're also setting precedent that it's acceptable to put an industrial facility next to a state park unit. When you're in Disneyland, you don't know that you're in the middle of Santa Ana, because Disneyland is built up in this beautiful way that you're in this little bubble. But Prairie City is not like that. None of our state parks or SVRAs are like that. When you're in the SVRA, you're in nature, and you're looking out at the space beyond it. And to have over 400,000 solar panels constructed immediately adjacent and impacting the view shed on two sides of the border of the park with 150-foot tall towers and the switchyard cables draped over some of the routes, the trails that we'll be riding on, that does not fit the same note as Disneyland. So the trade-offs are in your lap, and for state parks to move forward and basically sanction that it's okay to have industrial set next to at the doorstep and partly encroaching into a state park unit is simply unacceptable and something that I would implore that you would consider in full.
Thank you. Rose. Thank you very much. All right. Staff will now call the names of, that's all the ones I have in person, so staff will now call the names of those who have raised their hand on Zoom.
Awesome. Thank you, Chair Salazar. As a quick reminder to everyone, if you would like to speak for the public comment for non-agenda items, agenda item, please raise your hand now. We have two hands up, so I will start with Stephen Gierstad. Stephen, you may unmute and begin your public comment.
Okay, thank you. On October 24th of 2024, at 2744 in the meeting, I read to the commission and to the other OHMVR staff the content of Public Resources Code 5090.24, which outlines or states that the commission has the following duties and responsibilities. Subsection D of that says, quote, consider upon the request of any owner or tenant whose property is in the vicinity of any land in the system, any alleged adverse impacts occurring on that person's property from the operation of off-highway motor vehicles and recommend to the division suitable measures for the prevention of any adverse impacts determined by the commission to be occurring and suitable measures for the restoration of adversely impacted property. In that, the end quote, in that subsection of the PRC, they refer to the system. And the system is defined in Public Resources Code 5090.09, which states that system means the state vehicular recreation areas, the California statewide motorized trail, areas and trails within the state park system, and areas supported by the grants program, end quote. Numerous grants have been provided to numerous organizations to place OHV markers on my property and adjacent property, to develop maps that are distributed freely to riders, to develop kiosks that show hundreds of routes through private property in the Western Mojave, in the area known as the WEMO, and to provide an iPhone app. So this is clearly the grants area, and the statute, subsection D of the statute clearly indicates that this is the responsibility of the OHMBR division. At 2:31:15 in the same meeting, Commissioner Lemon stated that it looks like it's outside our privy, but it's an ongoing issue. And this is referring to the trespass and the routes on private property. I disagreed with that, and I wrote to Commissioner Salazar, Commission Chair Salazar, Commissioners Petrovsky, Lemon, to Director Quintero, and to Secretary Crowfoot regarding the issue here. And I stated, in that email, PRC 5090.24D, I stated 5090.09. I have still not received a response to that after nearly 13 months. And I have filed a motion to intervene in a federal lawsuit, and I have submitted a complaint in intervention to the federal courts regarding the BLM's role in this. And I still will have recourse to litigation if you don't address this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much for your comments. Next, we have Jeff Edwards. Jeff, you may unmute and begin your comments. Jeff Edwards.
Good morning. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Yes, very good. Thank you. Good morning again. This is Jeff Edwards. In reviewing the agenda, I didn't see anything on the ODSVRA, so I registered for general public comment. I apologize if there is an item or discussion later in the agenda. However, as I've suggested in the past, I think it's important that this commission take a leadership role in advancing the ODSVRA into the next era. In the past, I've spoken about the offer to dedicate that is available to accept. This is an offer to dedicate that creates a vertical public access from Highway 1 at Willow Road to the beach, to the Tosco buffer area, which State Parks is a lessee for. Which, on that note, as you may know, the closure of the Phillips 66 refinery is now on hold. And I think it's important, as lessees of that property, that there be correspondence between Phillips 66 and Parks in that regard. There is a lot of competition regarding the Tosco buffer area. We know that the Friends have shown interest through their quiet title action. Sierra Club is interested. The YTT Northern Chumash Indians are interested. So there's a great deal of interest in this Tosco buffer area, which is currently part of the ODSVRA. Additionally, I'd like to suggest that the La Grande tract, which is in the heart of the ODSVRA, which is a county-owned property, I would encourage Parks to pursue acquisition of that property. I do have it on good authority that the county is interested in selling that property, and I think it's time that a discussion ensue, appraisals made, and the state acquire the La Grande tract, which is approximately 600 acres. Between the La Grande tract and the Tosco buffer area, that's over 1,200 acres of the existing ODSVRA. So again, I would like and ask your commission to assert further leadership roles in pursuit of the park and its evolution. Interestingly enough, the Coastal Commission has been eerily silent on this matter, and I think it's going to be up to your commission and Parks to bring a solution to them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Jeff, thank you for your comments. Chair Salazar, that was the final comment online.
Okay. The public comment period is formally closed. I want to know if we have any questions or comments from the commissioners. And I can't see Tom, so I don't know if he's got any either. There you go. Any comments or questions from the commissioners? Commissioner Ross Leach?
Yeah, I guess it's great to hear from the public and having these things brought up. But I guess I'm a little frustrated, probably like the public is, that we keep hearing about the same issues and there's no action. So I'd like to hear an update, maybe not today, but in the next meeting, on what's happening on all these issues, because it's very frustrating for us and for the public. Sounds like some serious things with the right-of-way issue that we heard from Stephen, as well as some of the other issues. So just would like to see some follow-up.
Thank you. Any other commissioners? Commissioner Lemon.
Yeah, just real quickly, I like the idea of anytime we can add additional property to our facilities or our off-road areas. So if we could make sure that staff is looking at that very closely, I think that'd be great.
Thank you. Any other commissioners? And I, for one, echo that, Tom. I do think it's a great idea to continue to look at acquisition as part of our overall holistic plan as well, not just at Oceano, but in other places as well. Expanding our footprint, I think, is desirable on my part, and I'm sure others share that sentiment as well. So I'll just leave that at that. Thank you for that. All right, now we'll move on to item 5, which is the chair's report. I will provide my chair's report, which is that since our last meeting, I've been a little bit active and busy with discussions and activities. Had the opportunity to go to the Jeep Jamboree USA in the Black Hills of South Dakota, which is an incredible place to visit. If you love off-roading and you love history, going out there, hanging out in Deadwood, seeing where Wild Bill met his demise, and then taking your Jeep out on some of the runs out there, very challenging, very technical stuff that that I found out there. I was very pleasantly surprised, and that area of South Dakota is beautiful. So I would highly recommend that. I did in between meetings receive a response from one of the counties, and I can't remember which one, Vicki, that responded to the law enforcement task force letter that we sent out. But I did receive a response from one of the counties that wanted to see about further further discussion on that issue. So I'd like to keep moving on that on that item and seeing what we can do to work with our county law enforcement agencies that have OHV units.
Sure, that was Nevada County.
So then Nevada County responded in the affirmative on that letter. I also received acknowledgement from Sacramento County on the receipt of our letter on the Coyote Creek issue. And last night, prior to coming over here, I listened to 5 hours of testimony from the public. I thought it was really interesting with Sacramento County. They require swearing in of their of their public commenters. So you're all under oath, I guess. when they're having their discussions. I'm not recommending we do that here. I'm just saying that that's very interesting that everybody had to attest that they were under oath, or that they were sworn in before they did that. I'm just going to say this, and I sort of echo the comments that Don made earlier and Rose. It was very impressive to me to see the organization and the interest from the public on that issue, especially off-roaders, but not just off-roaders. It was folks from the environmental community. It was engineers. It was former SMUD officials, I was very surprised that SMUD wasn't there, and you sort of find out why as you sort of listen to the comments that they're kind of sheepish about the process of which they went through. But I'm just going to say, like I said, I commend the activists and the advocates who put together such an impressive showing. I know Sherry and all of you guys were there as well, and provided your comments on a variety of different issues. I was a little disappointed that our letter wasn't in their original packet in the Planning Commission when they met. I made sure the board clerk had our letter and emailed them prior to the meeting yesterday, and again, I still didn't see it in the packet, so I'm not sure why that's out there. But you can find that letter on our website, on the OHMVR website. It is in the materials there from the last meeting. So again, I just want to I know it wasn't the result you guys were looking for, but I want to congratulate the community for showing up and making your voices heard. I think that's very important. Also, in the interim, I did have a chance to have a conversation with folks of the Rubicon Trail Foundation about RS-2477 issues on the Rubicon Trail, and get a little update on what they're up to, and I've been in communication with some of the officers at Cal 4-Wheel on a issue that I'll bring up with Callan McLaughlin at another point, there's a request from Cal 4-Wheel to name the safety area at Clay Pit after Lon Klusman, there isn't a safety area yet there, so that's probably the holdup, but that's something that I'll bring up with Callan at a later date. And then the final thing for me is I just sort of wanted, this is more of a disclosure than anything else. I'm not looking for kudos or anything, but I think I'm supposed to, anytime you get on another board, you're supposed to disclose it to the governor's office. So I'm disclosing it here publicly that I've been named to the board of the California Conservation Corps Foundation, which is they've got a great mission as well, but I just want to make sure that that's publicly disclosed. So that is my chair's update. I will move to commissioners' reports. If any commissioners have updates from any interactions they've had since the last commission meeting, please raise your hand and I'll call you by name. Vice Chair Petrosky.
Good morning, everybody. As many of you already know, this meeting was scheduled originally for Victorville, California, down the south, and we were going to tour the OHV areas of the Barstow field office of the Bureau of Land Management, BLM. And having worked a lot of those areas during my years as a BLM ranger, I was really looking forward to that. Unfortunately, the government shut down, forced us to cancel that meeting. And it's really unfortunate because Barstow has a very active and varied OHV program. And it would be really good to see it again. So I hope in the future we can reschedule Barstow and, you know, put it back on our calendar.
Thank you. Any other commissioner updates and reports? Commissioner Irena?
Yes, thank you. I had the opportunity to speak on October 2nd for the California Natural Resources Agency regarding the honoring Latino heritage through nature, outdoor recreation, and community engagement. And part of the conversation was talking about our federal immigration and how it's going to affect Latinos who are enjoying the outdoors. Great conversation from all the panelists that were there. And I know there are uncertain times right now that people are trying to enjoy the outdoors and take their families out. In my area, I don't see a lot of that happening in our desert areas. We have a vast, large area of deserts. But we're going to keep an eye on that as well so that we can continue to enjoy the outdoors and enjoy the lands that we were born into. The other one is that this weekend I participated in the first jubilee Pope Francis wrote a book on how the earth and, you know, how we as people that are conservative should continue to bless our earth and Mother Earth as well and protect it from everything. So the first jubilee was held with San Bernardino County Diocese and San Diego County, Imperial County Diocese, and we were able to bring together about 120 pilgrims to walk from one area to the other. We ended up at the Sunny Bono Natural Refuge Unit, and just were learning a lot about the land. We had a member, a deacon, who was part of the indigenous group who came to support all the indigenous groups from the Pearl County and San Bernardino area. And as Don Amador spoke, this community has been degraded, not heard, and they're starting to come out and just to be part of any kind of conservation that we do within, you know, the work that we do here. So at the end, we ended up blessing the Salton Sea. And if for some of you that have never been to the Salton Sea, it's a sight to see. This once vibrant sea has kind of started to lose its water. But people are still happy there. I also understand that there's going to be work out being done out at the Salton Sea for possibly a regional park. And I think that's something that the OHMVR needs to be part of. I haven't heard anyone talk to this group about some of those plans that are up and coming with lithium, the solar panels, and also the geothermal. So we continue to dig into the ground. We need to be part of that as well. And any other off-road riding within the Salton Sea area. So thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Lemon?
Yeah, just a quick update and a big thank you to Director Cotero for talking about the Safety Week and all the work that goes into it. As desert season starts to kick off, and we had our very first big event in Ocotillo Wells, Megan's Run, which is a tragic story of a young woman who was killed in a head-on collision out here a few years ago, and they start the season every year with a stark reminder of how dangerous off-roading can be when safety protocols aren't followed. So they just be safe, folks. It's a long season, and it's in full effect. Desert conditions, quite frankly, couldn't be better. The ground is damp, and the dust is not flying. And this week, rivers flowed. San Felipe flowed all the way through Ocotillo Wells, Arroyo Salada up in the northern part of OW. flowed freely. So good stuff.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Ross Leach.
Yeah, I just wanted to share. I'm on the California State Parks Foundation Board, recently the chair, and I got to hand off the baton last meeting. I just wanted to share, I was in early November able to tour Enza Borrego State Park, which is the largest state park in California. I think it's over 500,000 acres. And it was really a wonderful experience. I hadn't been there in a very long time. And we had time with the superintendent at a dinner. We heard from the Enza Borrego Foundation about the work they're doing in partnership with the state park staff. And what was really amazing to have the staff, we had tours of the different labs that are there at the park with botany, cultural resources, paleontology, and geology. And it was just wonderful to see and hear the staff and how passionate and knowledgeable they are about these things. And they just kind of, it seems like they go above and beyond what their job requires when you hear their stories about their work. So it's just a wonderful place to go, and I just wanted to share that.
Any other commissioners? Commissioner Mueller.
Yeah, first I want to just recognize and thank our vets. Last week was Veterans Day, and I just want to take a moment of thanking everybody online or that's here. Thank you for your service. Sincerely appreciate that. A couple things. I was able to present at the State Parks Commission in September at Brennan Island State Park about the local conservation corps and the conservation corps programming and how we are collectively working throughout the entire state for some of the project work that we're doing. The Parks or State Parks Commission was there. Armando, you're there. I just thought it was a great opportunity to be able to share the type of work that's being done throughout the entire state and the opportunities that are being provided thanks to Parks. Also, I was able to tour Carnegie in October with the Parks and other staff to be able to see the great project work and the work that's being done there in total. So a lot of, I think, just great opportunities and a lot of positive work that's being done out in Carnegie and the other parks. So I just want to thank the staff again for all the work that they're doing and support. Thank you. Thank Go you. Safety Week.
Go Safety Week. Commissioner Randall.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, I have been talking to bikers with an emphasis on minority or black bikers. And in talking to them, to be honest about it, they're not that familiar with OHV. So I have been trying to, you know, we have a large constituency in Los Angeles, but it's only in Los Angeles. I need to expand that beyond just the Los Angeles area. So I have been talking, as I said, to many of them. They're not familiar with it. And so I just need to know, you know, what is it that else, what else can I do? Because I am talking to people, people are listening, but I'm not making that much of a headway. So I need to find some way to make more of an impact within the black community as far as OHV is concerned.
Thank you. Any other commissioners? All right. We will now move to the ad hoc committee reports. If any ad hoc committee members have updates on behalf of their ad hoc committees from any interactions they've had since the last commission meeting, please raise your hand and I'll call you by name. And again, as I mentioned, I did get some feedback from one of the counties on the law enforcement task force, so we'll continue those discussions with law enforcement. Any other ad hoc committee members? Commissioner Urena.
I just wanted to say thank you to the to Superintendent Arroyo for helping us out over at Heber Dunes on Friday the 14th. We held a sky night visual, if you will, but that night, unfortunately, it was cloudy. Almost at the end of the night, the clouds opened up and we were able to look at some of the stars out there. We had a representative from the U.S. Former U.S. Forest Department member who now works for the Vatican. And he spoke about the stars, and it was interesting. I didn't have any idea what, you know, how the stars flicker up in the sky and how they were created. So it was a good educational tour for us to see that. You know, shout out to the interpreters that were there as well. very helpful to the 60 people that showed up that night. I did talk to our superintendent to see how we can maybe stage more lessons over at Heber Dunes because it's in closer proximity to all the cities within the Imperial County. But Safety Week continues to happen at Ocotillo Wells. I just want to see a little bit more training lessons for the small kids. We'll work on that hopefully for next year. But with that, Safety Week should be every week, and let's just make sure that we stay that way for the end of next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other ad hoc committee reports? Commissioner Ross Leach.
Yeah, my bad. I don't have a report. So all of us, we should strive to have an ad hoc meeting that you're on before our next commission meetings. Can we all try to do that?
Yes.
Yep. All right. With that, then, I'm going to go ahead and move to public comment. So we'll begin with some in-person public comments on the commissioner's report and the ad hoc committee reports. Don Amador. Ted Cabral. Rose Wynn.
Hi, just real briefly, Commissioner Urania, I appreciate what you just mentioned and I agree. Commissioner Ross Leach, I appreciate what you just said and I agree. We do need to have meetings. You had mentioned, I was thinking of you, Commissioner Urania, because you had mentioned the developments going on in Southern California, and these are the types of issues like we've seen at Prairie City where we're largely unaware of some really major stuff that's going on, and those ad hoc committees would be so helpful for us to have another venue to bring information together and begin collaboration much earlier in the process so that OHV really has a voice at the table. And so for all the ad hoc committees, but especially those impacting our Southern California units and Oceano Dunes, I would really, really love to see some regular meetings taking place. Thank you.
Thank you, Rose. Appreciate that. Any comments online?
Yeah, we do have one. We'll start with Stephen Gierstedt. Stephen, you may unmute and begin your comments.
Thank you. So in a recent meeting, Commissioner Lemon cut off Commissioner Petrovsky on a procedural point, stating that he didn't want Commissioner Petrovsky to address issues related to OHV routes on private property and trespass on private property because I had brought up the prospect of litigation. And we're running into kind of a circular argument here because earlier in this meeting, in the public comment on non-agenda items...
Hey, Stephen, these are public comments on the commission report or the ad hoc committee
yes,
reports.
Yes, and that's where I'm going, and I'll get there very soon, okay? So... The circularity in the argument is that I requested that the commission fulfill a statutory duty, which the commission has failed to do or refused to do for nearly 18 months. Litigation is a natural response when a public agency fails to fulfill a duty. Then in response, I said I may exercise that prerogative that I have to bring litigation against the commission for that failure. In response to that, Commissioner Lemon said that we shouldn't talk to this guy anymore because he might bring litigation. So we're running in a circular argument here. And bringing it back to your point, Commissioner Chair Salazar, one of the standing committees is on the public interface or the private property interface. Commissioner Lemon sits on that committee. Commissioner Petrovsky sits on that committee or subcommittee, ad hoc committee. And I'd like you to reconsider this position of refusing to interact with me because I could bring litigation against you. In any interaction that you have, litigation is always a possibility. The litigation hasn't been commenced, but the procedure is there in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure for joining both the OHMBR division and the commission in the federal lawsuit that the Center for Biological Diversity has brought and that I have now filed a motion to intervene in. So I mean, if your choice at this point is to refuse to interact with me, then there's only one direction that this can go in, and that's toward bringing this into federal court. And thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Appreciate that. Any other?
That was the final one. Thank you, Chair.
That's the final one. Okay, I appreciate that. Then we will formally close the public comment period.
Can I speak? Would that be our okay?
If you need, yeah, go ahead.
Chair, if there are OHV activities happening on private land and the owner has complained and has interacted with the commission on that, can we appropriately ask for what's going on? What's the response? I'm not saying that these claims are true. I would just, if they repeat, I would just like to know if we could get some sort of report.
The division has responded to this person. I don't know if it's a number of times, and we could certainly get you that that information if that would be helpful. I'm reluctant to say anything else at this point other than what we've said in the letter. So let us get that to you. And, you know, I think it has a more full explanation of the situation. Would
no
that
doubt.
Be satisfactory?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure. Thanks.
Chair.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
I'd just like to comment on a couple things. One of them is that State Parks has a recreational area at the Salton Sea along the eastern shore line, and there's an old visitor center there. There's programs there that we also deliver. But the Resources Agency has a Salton Sea Management Program, and I think the request to have a presentation on both would be really good. Because one of the things that we really want to get ahead of is any statements that may not be accurate. You know, and a lot of times we get questions where the question involves erroneous information. So I think it'd be great for us to get that on the calendar for next time. It's a really good request.
Well, we request that then.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. But the other thing I'd just like to mention, following up on Commissioner Mueller's comments about the Conservation Corps, it's a really important reminder that state parks do not function alone. Throughout the state, we have partnerships with Conservation Corps that are local, Conservation Corps that are statewide. It's a critical part of the workforce that helps to protect these places. But I will also say that there are a number of other agencies that work in partnership with state parks, CAL FIRE, local fire departments, and tribal groups. And so there's a number of groups that are active in all of these areas. And I think it might be important as we go forward to, and I know that we've done it in the past, but making sure that we acknowledge the various groups that are helping to protect certainly any of the SVRA areas. And I'll also say that along with the grants programs, which are managed by the off-highway vehicle programs, State Parks also has a large grants program. So State Parks actually invests in communities across California. And since the early 70s, these departments together have invested well over $3 billion in communities to improve their recreational opportunities. So the impact of what you all do and what State Parks does together is really pretty profound. But again, it stands on really strong relationships and partnerships to really make it work. And I just wanted to mention that with the mention of the Conservation Corps. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Director. All right, so now we're going to move on to item 8, legislative update. I'd like to introduce Maribel Barajas to comment, to provide an update on state legislation.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. I'm Maribel Barajas, the Legislative Deputy for State Parks. This report provides a summary and the status of legislation affecting the Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Recreation Division. Information contained in this report is as accurate as October 22nd, 2025. SB 586 by Senator Jones is the off-highway electric motorcycles that was signed by the governor. This bill establishes a definition of off-highway electric motorcycles, also referred as e-motos in the vehicle code. This bill defines these vehicles as off-highway motorcycles with an electric motor that are designed for off-highway use and meet other specified requirements. This bill classifies these e-motos as off-highway motor vehicles, subjecting them to all applicable laws, including identification and safety requirements. Next slide.
Please silence all your phones.
I'll just pause for a minute. Next bill is Senate Bill 563. This is regarding eligible grant applicants for the OHMVR grant program. This is currently a two-year bill. This bill would add special districts that employ peace officers as eligible grant applicants as specified. This concludes the legislative report, but I also want to take an opportunity and a moment to acknowledge the recent conversations recently about an OHV safety bill. The timing couldn't be more perfect since this is our OHV safety week. Neither the department nor the administration will be taking an official position on a proposal. That said, once a bill is formally introduced, I'm happy to connect with the member's office and offer our technical assistance. We all recognize how important this issue is, and I'm hopeful that everyone involved can work together towards a thoughtful and effective solution. I look forward to working with you all in this crucial program. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mary Bell. Appreciate that. We're now going to go ahead and begin public comments for the legislative update. And then after that, we'll go for with the online comments. So I will start with Rose Wynn. Ted Cabral.
Good morning, Commissioners. Ted Cabral, AMA District 36 in Corva. I'd like to acknowledge the fact that SB 586 did get signed, like Ms. Barajas mentioned. It was a bit of work, obviously, to get it through the process, but it's going to be an exciting future for the OHV program because there's a whole class of vehicles. I mean, Commissioner Randall, one thing you spoke of earlier is how can you engage inner-city youth? And how can you engage African-American youth? Well, these types of vehicles have traditionally been used in those type of areas, although not in an OHV setting, but they've been on public streets or in city parks and stuff, which is not the appropriate place to use these vehicles. So as this develops, we're going to be looking at a future where we can start looking at areas where there's going to be in dense urban environments where you can develop an OHV park that doesn't have tailpipe emissions, doesn't have noise, and we can create something similar to a bicycle pump track or something on steroids, something bigger, larger, and, you know, but if there's a surplus piece of property or in an industrial area, something like that can be a way we can kind of shift the program to an exciting new arena and also engage a whole different type of user, an OHV user, as we go forward. Will there be challenges? Yes, I anticipate there's going to be some. I expect the grants program to possibly be, there's going to be some law enforcement agencies that are going to be inquiring about grants. They're going to have to make sure that they can do it with the regulations and such. But I also would like to publicly state that a lot of these areas already get in lieu funds that a lot of the people in these agencies aren't aware of, but these monies are going from the program into these counties, and these monies are supposed to be used for OHV-type programs, and this would be a really good application to use these in lieu funds for something like this. So that's basically what I have on that, and I really appreciate everyone that worked behind the scenes on this. It was a lot of people that helped with it. But I'm looking forward to being an assistant and maybe provide some technical expertise as the program gets rolled out and we move forward. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ted. Don Amador?
I passed.
Okay. Rose, you passed already, right? Sherry, you've got on here, Sherry Storton, you've got SB 155, which is wasn't addressed here, but it's on the this is on legislative update. If you'd like to come up and talk about SB 155, or
it's later in the agenda.
See later in the agenda. Okay, very good. Thank you. That's all the public comments I have here. Any online?
We do not have any online.
Okay. We'll get there. All right. So we will formally close all public comments. Commissioner Anderson, you had a quick comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to coattail on Ted Cabral's comments. I've been thinking about the eMotos issue the whole time I've been on OHV, and in San Francisco in particular, we've been dealing with sideshows with youth that are using motorcycles and eMotos, and they're really quite able on these vehicles. And I talked with now departed Police Chief Bill Scott about this idea of maybe looking at the Candlestick Point State Recreation Area and the areas around it, because it's the NorCal Waste Systems, Inc. property, too. It's industrial, not a lot of neighbors. I think it would be a great place to maybe do a very small pilot program, maybe just about safety, just to have the equipment and the vehicles out there and introduce it. And I know all sorts of stakeholders that could bring people out just to have an introduction. Doesn't necessarily mean we have to use heavy equipment, but I'm really excited about this prospect, and we definitely should move quickly and start working with community stakeholders on this. So thank you for bringing that up, Ted.
Thank you. Any other commissioners? Commissioner Ross Leach.
Thank you, Mary Val, for your update. I have a couple questions for you. I'm sorry, I don't have the bill name number. But I believe this year a bill was passed, SB whatever number it is, about land acquisition for state parks, making it a lot easier. And I just wonder if maybe we can have an update, maybe not today, but another time, about how that works and how it affects state vehicle recreation areas.
So those bills, 679 and 630, were signed by the governor. It doesn't impact OHV lands or acquisitions in that. It's mostly what related to state park lands. But I'm happy to send you an email and all of the commissioners with an update on those two bills.
So we talked about Oceana Dunes a lot and the properties that we would like to have the state parks acquire. So those, like the La Grande, the Phillips, that could not be covered in this bill. They wouldn't help. Is that right?
No.
Okay.
I'm looking at, yeah.
Be good to understand that a bit more, maybe not today, but another time. The other question I have for you is we're hearing a lot about these different planning efforts happening around the state affecting our OHV parks, SVRAs, and so one idea is there some way to be more proactive legislatively to get more of a heads up? I don't know what it looks like, but something like that we get the state parks, OHV, the commission gets more of a heads up about these planning efforts. And that's a very complicated process, but I'm just wondering, with your experience, you might have ideas on how that could happen.
We can definitely have a further discussion on that piece offline. Thank you.
Commissioner Arrhenia?
I have a question regarding Senate Bill 563. On here, it says that this bill would add special districts. Does that mean, is there a cap to the number of districts, or is, I'm just concerned because we already have law enforcement throughout the state that requests grants, and if we're adding more special districts, is there a specific number?
So there are approximately over 3,300 special districts across the state. Although the author indicates that they have identified around six special districts that would qualify specifically for SB 563. We did raise that concern that we think there's more that could qualify, and so therefore we had some fiscal costs associated to it, because we also agree that it could impact that program.
And where are these districts located specifically?
So the six that the legislative member has identified is East Bay Regional Park Department, Mountain Recreation and Conservation Authority, Simi Valley, and Hesperia Recreation and Park District, and there's two others. I can send you that list.
Okay. I'm just looking at in terms of the grants that are going to be coming up.
Right.
And if it's going to affect the current grants that we have for the already overwhelming number right. of grants for law enforcement.
Yeah, we identify that, you know, although special districts, since special district is not defined in statute or in that bill, this could open up the law enforcement grant category to many other unintended entities.
Wow. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Randall.
So, Ted has talked about, you know, these e-bikes for quite some time, and he has kept the commissioners aware of the problem that we are having, you know, with these bikes. San Dimas, a population of approximately 40,000 people, you know, we have e-bikes everywhere. I mean, they are everywhere. Where, and people are riding them on sidewalks, they are riding them in unrestricted areas. And so I'm really, really glad that he has kept the commissioners aware of what has been transpiring, you know, with these bikes, because something has been done about it, and we appreciate it, Ted. Thank you so very much.
Any other commissioners? Okay.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify, 679 and 630 could apply to OHV lands, but I can provide you with more information on those two bills and to all of the commissioners. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. That ends that. That'll close the item number 8. We'll move on to item number 9, law enforcement. In particular, Senate Bill 708 update, I would like to introduce Jack Gorman, OHMVR Division Assistant Chief, to provide the Senate Bill 708 update.
Hello. Good morning, Commissioners, fellow staff, and attendees. My name is Jack Gorman, and I'm the Assistant Chief of the Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Division. I'm here today to provide you an update of the Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Division 708 Sanction Event Permit Program. Next slide, please. Purpose. The purpose is to ensure that newer year model motorcycles have the ability to participate in sanctioned events on public lands, even if they're ineligible for OHV identification, such as red or green sticker. Relevance. The reason that sanctioned event permits are important is to ensure the longevity of motorcycle sanctioned events on public lands for many years to come. Sponsorship and support. SB 708 was sponsored by the Coalition of Public Access and is sponsored by the American Motorcycle Association, Arch Motor Company, Bay Area Riders Forum, California Motorcycle Dealers Association, California Wilderness Coalition, Chaparral Motorsports, District 36 Motorcycle Sports Committee, FMF Racing, Fox Racing, KTM North America, Malcolm Smith Motorsports, Motion Pro Incorporated, and Motorcycle Industry Council. Next slide, please. Background. So the state of California enacted Senate Bill 708, signed into law by Governor Gavin Newsom on September 22, 2024. Introduced by Senator Brian W. Jones, this bipartisan legislation addressed critical need for the off-highway motor vehicle community. This law will require the Department of Parks and Recreation to issue a permit for competition motorcycles that do not qualify for green or red sticker identification. These special use permits are only available for model year 2022 and newer motorcycles and valid during sanctioned events approved by public land managing agencies. The new permit system will take effect January 1 of 2026. Next slide, please. So what is a sanction event? A sanction event permit is a special permit issued by the Department of Parks and Recreation to operate certain off-highway motorcycles at sanction event. For purposes of California Vehicle Code Section 38087.7, a sanction event means an event approved by an agency within its guidelines for off-highway vehicle competition or racing event. Public land management agencies will make the ultimate decision on whether a sanction event permit is required during racing competitions or sanction events held on public lands that they manage. Next slide, please. So when is a sanction event permit required? When a sanction event permit is required when an event is held on public lands and the model year 2022 or newer competition motorcycles that are not eligible for red or green stickers, OHV identification, or the non-resident permit. Next slide, please. What will the permit look like? This here is a rendering of the 2026 sanction event permit. A sanction event permit shall be displayed on the left side of the motorcycle and should be visible for inspection during sanction event permits. The sanction event permit is non-refundable, non-replaceable, and void if removed from the off-highway motorcycle. Next slide, please. Where will the permits be sold? As of November 1st of this year, the permit is now available for the 2026 riding season for sanctioned events. OHMVR has also worked with sanctioned event holders to set up concessionary agreements to ensure these permits are available on site for permit compliance. The total cost will be $30, and they expire the 31st of the year they are issued. Next slide, please. Path forward. Agency preparedness. OHMVR division has worked with public land managers such as the U.S. Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, and state-managed state vehicle recreation areas, helping them understand the requirements outlined in Senate Bill 708 and how they can work with sanctioned event organizers for consistency statewide. Building consistency with event management. The Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Division encourages public land managers and sanctioned event holders to meet during the permitting process for sanctioned events to ensure regulations outlined in 708 are being met. Supporting safe and sustainable OHV recreation. Senate Bill 708 will restore fees that were lost when the Red Sticker program was sunsetted in 2021. These new funds will go to support event-related costs, including trail maintenance and conservation. Next slide, please. That concludes my presentation. I'm available for any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll get you back up here because we do have some questions in a minute, but we'll go out to item 9B, end of season Rubicon update. I'd like to introduce Luke Ware, Public Safety Superintendent, to provide the end of season Rubicon update.
Good morning, OHV Commission, executive staff, and members of the public. Thank you for being here today. I'm going to be giving a very brief update on our Rubicon efforts over the 2025 season. We're very proud to be involved with the Rubicon Trail. Next slide, please. So I'll be talking about the summary of this last season's Rubicon deployments, a little bit of background, our deployment focus on the trail, as well as participating agencies and some of the results that we achieved this season. Next slide, please. So OHMVR law enforcement staff has been active on the trail for over the last decade, including on the surrounding trails. Our staff, as well as visiting state park peace officers, work in partnership with our local and federal agencies, thank you for being here today, to educate the public and enforce laws out on the trail. Some of our partners include El Dorado County Sheriff, Placer County Sheriff, U.S. Forest Service, and Nevada County Sheriff. Next slide, please. So the background on the Rubicon Trail, it's a 22-mile county road trail that begins at Loon Lake and ends in Tahoma on the west shore of Lake Tahoe. It passes through El Dorado County, Placer County, the El Dorado National Forest, the Tahoe National Forest, the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit, as well as private property. So many, many shareholders involved in the Rubicon Trail. Next slide, please. I get asked on the trail all the time, I'm one of the ones that goes out there and patrols, does this go through state parks property? And it does not. But Public Resources Code 5090.32 assigns the OHMVR division certain duties, and those include enforcing Division 16.5 of the Vehicle Code, as well as other laws regulating the use and equipment on OHVs in all areas acquired, maintained, or operated with funding from the OHV Trust Fund. So the OHMVR division primarily provides for the enforcement of Division 16.5 through its grants program. to federal and local agencies. But we also provide that support with field support personnel, so that's why you'll see us out on the trail, and we're happy to be there. The series of deployments on the Rubicon Trail is to primarily assist El Dorado County Sheriff, Placer County Sheriff, and the U.S. Forest Service with those proactive law enforcement patrols. Assistance is also provided by Nevada County Sheriff's Office with joint patrols in the nearby Forest Trail, which we were out there this season for Sierra Trek. Nevada County Sheriff's Office has also assisted us, as well as El Dorado County, on the Rubicon Trail when requested for certain special calls for service. Next slide, please. Which brings us to our deployment focus. Trail users see us out there, and they're generally very happy to see us. That's because our focus is on the busy weekends when people are out there educating, enforcing vehicle code violations, resource crimes, handing out stickers and bandanas to the kids, as well as providing for emergency response. We as Jeeps and ROVs patrol the trail. Next slide, please. So this summer, between May and October, we made over 550 OHV-related contacts on the Rubicon Trail, surrounding trails, and Fordyce Trail. The most common contact is, of course, a consensual contact, where we stop our vehicle and we say hello, see how people's weekends are going, how their vacation's going, building rapport with the OHV community. We did make enforcement contacts, which focus on alcohol, resource crimes, as well as safety violations. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Thank you, Commission, executive staff. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Luke. Appreciate you very much. It's always great to see you out there as well. So. All right, so I'd like to begin in-person public comments on both the on the law enforcement update with both SB 708 and the Anna Susan Rubicon update, and then after hearing all the in-person public comments, we will do virtual comments. Don Amador,
pass.
Ted Cabral,
pass.
Rose Wynn,
pass.
All right. Any online comments?
We do not have any online.
All right. I'll move to commissioners. Any comments or from the commissioners on these reports? Commissioner Anderson.
Jack, just for my own edification, could you help me understand, kind of a newbie here, what is SB 708? What are the issues that it was trying to fix or solve?
Yeah, great. That's a great question, Kat. So, to operate an off-highway vehicle on public lands, you have to have some kind of identification or special permit. Since these model year 2022 and newer motorcycles are non-CARB compliant, which means they're not eligible for a red or a green sticker, and if they don't live out of state, they're not eligible for a non-resident permit. So this would not, there's a whole gap of motorcycles from those 2022 and newer non-CARB compliant, which are typically competition motorcycles, that weren't eligible to ride at all on public lands, even during sanctioned events.
Okay.
Our sanctioned event permit basically allows them some form of identification or special permit that will allow them to operate on public lands during that sanctioned event for the competition use only.
Thank you.
Commissioner Rania.
I just have a quick question on the permit. If I want to buy a sanctioned event permit, is it best to buy it the 1st of January and use it for the entire year, or is it every month that you have to buy it for $30? How does that work?
Yes, Commissioner Arena. So the permit is good for a calendar year. It's good from January 1 to December 31st. And so you can buy it at the beginning of the year. They're currently on sale right now on our Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Division website for the 2026 season. So you could purchase it now and have your permit ready for the next sanctioned event season.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Lemon.
Thank you. Don't leave, Jack. I see you're still there. That's good. Hey, so every off-roader wants the fastest, quickest, lightest bike possible. At least that's my sense. So they buy them. And what I'm hearing now is you can't get a red sticker, you can't get a green sticker. You're probably not competing, you're just recreational riding, and you're stuck riding private tracks and private property. And yet, the manufacturers are dumping these bikes out like crazy. I mean, they're, you know, everybody wants one. So you, and if you don't live out of state, you can't ride it in California anymore. Did I sum that up pretty good, with the exception of the private areas?
Yes, you did, Commissioner.
Why? This is a much bigger problem than we can face today, but why are we selling bikes that can't be ridden on, you know, why are manufacturers selling so many? And I bet you if you look at the numbers, there's a high number, and I know Ted's in the room. He could probably address this as well as anyone, how many of those bikes are being sold. But I get a sense that there's a lot of folks riding and racing away so that they don't have to show a sticker. And I'm not sure that the competition special event sticker solves that issue, because I think a lot of them are going to think they got a sticker that says 26 and the special event is, well, it's Thanksgiving weekend, it's New Year's weekend or whatever. I think we're going to hear a lot more about this in the future.
Jack, did you want to respond to that, Jack, or Ted, did you want to come up if you're open to it, addressing what Commissioner Lemon was asking?
Yes, I can.
Well, come on up.
Yes, Ted Cabral from AMA District 36. First, I want to say, Jack, I appreciate your efforts on this. You put a lot of work into this. And also, I'd like to acknowledge Don Amador. He spent a good 4 years or more of his life trying to put this together. This is a workaround. And this is a workaround because CARB said these vehicles weren't compliant. I was on the subcommittee that did the testing and stuff on these red sticker vehicles. The tailpipe emissions of these vehicles was cleaner than the standards in many cases. But the evaporative emissions on these vehicles was not. And the evaporative emissions were not, because if you have evaporative emissions on a vehicle, by law, you have to have a warranty. The manufacturers will not do a warranty on a race competition vehicle because it leads them to be for liability issues. So there's a whole jumble of stuff that happens here. So Commissioner Lemon, what you suggested was not entirely accurate, and that is these are not the most popular vehicles sold. When it comes to off-highway vehicles, these have the lowest percentage of sales or competition off-road vehicles. These competition vehicles are designed to be used in competition events. The manufacturers make no bones on when they sell these vehicles. They say specifically on all their paperwork and vehicle, on the vehicle, the certificate of origin, on any other pieces of paper with them, this is a competition vehicle and it's for competition uses only. Very clear. So, organization I'm representing, AMA District 36, they have competition events throughout Northern California. There's many other organizations, like in Southern California, AMA District 37. So they do competition events that are permitted with agencies to be able to use these specific vehicles. So it's only to be used for that. If anyone's using it outside of that, they should be using a different type of vehicle, which are far more popular, which would be a green sticker type vehicle. And the sales numbers show that there's a big disparity in the sales. Realistically, these are going to be used on a closed course event for a 1 or maybe 2 day type event. That's it. That's the idea behind it. When I say it's a workaround, it's not popular. It's not popular with the users. I'm going to be frank. CARB completely blew it, how they bungled this throughout the process. And then they came up with a confusing finish to it all. And it left the consumers, different agencies and stuff, not knowing really what to do. So we had to recover somehow. This was the workaround for it. I know that online we're seeing a lot of blowback about having to have a permit on these vehicles. Our comeback has simply been from the racing organization is, look, do you want to race or not? And that's what it comes down to. If they want, this is their avenue to be able to do the to be able to use the vehicle. So that's it all in a nutshell. But I just want to be clear, Commissioner Lemon, is these are not the most popular OHV vehicles. And frankly, for most of the general users, they are too powerful and too much for them, and they tend to go in a different direction.
So, thank you.
Ted, I appreciate that. And I would just follow up with, this is how we kind of got into the whole red sticker issue, was folks were riding green sticker bikes or and then buying bikes that couldn't get green stickers and then ended up with red stickers, and now we're going to do competition stickers. I understand the reach around, it's creative, but it's really not solving the ultimate problem of red sticker bikes riding in the wrong season. And what I'm sure we're going to see, and maybe I could ask Jack to kind of keep a tab on number of citations or attempted citations for competition stickered vehicles as we roll into the season.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other comments? Commissioner Ross Leach? Oh, Jack, did you want to have anything to add, or you just?
That's definitely something we can do for you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had a question or comment for Luke. This is great to see the numbers here. I just wonder if maybe in the future showing a little history, like how, you know, like is this good? The 23 deployment days, is that way more than in the past or less?
I don't have the data available to me right now for that. I can get that information.
Well, I'm just saying maybe in the future have a little history, like 2 or 3 years, you know, rolling.
Sure. So during the summer period, we do try to be out there every weekend, and just due to staffing levels and other things going on throughout the state, we're not able to get out there every weekend. But, I mean, 23 deployment days spread out over those few months, it's it comes out to at least once or twice a month we're doing mm-hmm. a deployment weekend. So.
Okay.
It is quite often. We're out there on the weekdays as well.
And can you give an example of what a resource crime is? What do you see out there?
So one of the big issues on the trail is people driving off trail. And just like on state parks property, everything in the forest is protected. So unless you have a permit to remove native material, you know, you can't be driving over plants or cutting trees down or anything like that. So resource damage would be like driving over vegetation, parking your Jeep in the lake, things like that, and we're on the lookout for.
Great. And then have you ever thought of a ride-along program for commissioners?
I'll check with my management, and I think that's probably something we can...
I've ridden along.
Yeah,
I mean, ridden behind and in front of.
Well, some of us might be interested.
We can work on that.
Any other commissioner comments on these items? I do want to say, Luke, again, I do appreciate the work that you guys are doing out there. You are indeed a welcome site for the off-roaders that are out there. They welcome your presence, the county sheriffs, and you know, all the other OHV folks that are out there. So keep up the good work. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. All right. So that's the end of item 9, unless there are any other comments from commissioners. So what I'm going to do right now, before we get into the next item, is take a 10-minute bio break and then let folks come back. So right now it is 10:39. We'll get back here at 10:50, and we'll keep going after that. All right, Tom, you still have your hand up. I don't know if you wanted to put it down, because I want to call on you.
I appreciate that. Sorry, I didn't realize that.
No worries. All right, we'll get back in session here. We're going to move on to action item 10, or item 10, which is the OHMBR Grants and Cooperative Agreements Program. I'm now going to introduce Jessica Terry for the OHMBR Grants and Cooperative Agreements Program agenda item. Jessica?
Good afternoon. Oh, well, it's still the morning, isn't it? Good morning, commissioners. My name is Jessica Terry. I've been a grant administrator at the division for the last 8 years. Part of my background includes growing up four-wheeling and riding ROVs with my family in places like the Rubicon and Sierra Trek Trails, to name a few. As a kid growing up in the Bay Area, this is how we got out into the forest, and I learned a lot about, you know, treading lightly and the importance of conservation. So it's really a pleasure to work with agencies now who provide well-managed off-highway recreation. And I'm proud of what our team has accomplished to support these agencies. I'm going to review the results from the G25 grant cycle. The awards are officially final. We received 4 appeals to our intent to award, which published on August 2nd, 2025. Those appeals were resolved, and we officially posted on September 16th, 2025. Next slide, please. On this slide, you can see a breakdown of the awards, which you will also find with the attachments within the grants update report. The division awarded 119 projects for a total of $23.6 million, and our compliance unit is currently working with the successful applicants to process the project agreements. Next slide, please. Our upcoming G26 technical workshop will be held on January 7th and 8th in Reading, and registration is currently open. The workshop will be on 2 separate days. January 7th is for law enforcement, and January 8th is for all other project types. The workshop continues to be a hybrid model, allowing people to attend in person or virtually. And the second half of January 8th will be a new addition to the workshop, which will be an outdoor session for open discussion at the well-known Chappie Shasta OHV area. This will be for all project types except for law enforcement. The team hopes the in-person session will provide an engaging and dynamic setting for grant writers to examine a diverse range of project types through structured discussions and hands-on activities. We're hoping the session will also leverage the open-air environment to foster creativity and collaboration and critical thinking. I would also like to introduce a new member of the Grant Administration Unit, Heidi Burns. She joined us in October and has hit the ground running. She brings grant administration experience from the Division of Boating and Waterways at California State Parks, and she also has experience riding quads and snowmobiles. We're definitely lucky to have her on the team. I'm also here today to assist the Commission in meeting public resource code requirements. Next slide, please. Per Public Resource Code 5090.24, before the start of each grants program cycle, the OHMVR Commission must hold a public meeting to gather input from the public regarding the grant program. As a reminder, this is a non-voting action item. The public comment time provides an opportunity for individuals, organizations, and stakeholders, and the commissioners to share their perspectives, suggestions, and concerns about the program's goals, priorities, and implementation. This is a chance to make suggestions and/or recommendations to help shape the program's direction, ensuring it meets the needs of our communities and supports safe, responsible off-highway recreation. At this point, Mr. Chair, I will turn it back over to you so we can open up for comments.
Great. Thank you, Jessica. I appreciate that. It's now time to hear public comments for the OHMVR Grants and Cooperative Agreements Program. I'll begin by calling the names of those who have submitted comment cards for this item in person. And I'm assuming we don't have any other ones, but Rose Wynn. Pass. Ted Cabral.
Commissioners, Ted Cabral from AMA District 36 and also CORVA. And a couple of things I'd like to point out about the grants program. First off, it has become exceedingly difficult for smaller nonprofits to be able to be part of this process right now. Most of the grants are being won by larger federal agencies or people like that because they have the ability to have a professional grants writer to be able to write the grants. It's become cumbersome. The system is designed I understand the checks and balances, but there needs to be some ways to streamline this and make it easier. Perhaps it could be graded on a curve type of a thing, so maybe for the smaller organizations, they don't have to have quite as strict reporting standards or something, but that's something I'd like to see looked at. Secondly is, and this one I know this is, it's not going to go over real well with the higher-ups, but the budgeting on this. I mean, we got to be realistic with the numbers here. The grants program, we've had, on average, over the last 10 years, it's been about almost 16% cost of living increase in the state of California, and construction costs have gone up almost 40% on average, okay? So our budget for the grants has stayed roughly the same throughout this period of time. So it's really hard to stretch this money thinner as we're doing it. People are volunteering and using volunteer hours to match and doing all those things, but it's making it really difficult to be able to do this very important work. We all know that if it was just left up to agencies and their budgets and not doing these partnerships with nonprofits, that they would not be able to stretch their dollars as far. So we need to have agencies working with nonprofits and using volunteer work power, you know, people power, to be able to get these projects moving forward, just to do basic maintenance. So that's what I would like to see, is an adjustment in the grants program to be able to allow smaller organizations to do just the simple basic maintenance, brushing, removing down tree, you know, deadfall, being able to clear culverts and clear any type of, you know, water controls for trail systems. So that's what I have. I'd like to see some adjustments there if we can over the next couple of years.
Thank you, Ted. Appreciate that comment. Those comments. Don Amador?
Don Amador, MIC, Quiet Warrior Racing. I echo everything that Ted said about the need to streamline the grants process. You know, we've talked about it before. Would urge you guys to continue to look for ways to streamline what's become a pretty onerous process. And also with the budget, like Ted said, you know, the cost of living, as we all know it, has gone up 30-40% in the last 4 or 5 years. And we're still have, as far as I know, a revenue shortfall to the OHV program. We're about $25 million short every year from revenue, and I know Parks is working on that. I would just encourage Parks to continue working on that, addressing that revenue shortfall. And don't forget the streamlining of the grants. Thank you.
Thanks, Don. Any online comments?
We do not have any comments online.
All right. The public comment period then is formally closed. Do we have questions or comments from the commissioners? Commissioner Anderson?
Thank you. Hey, Jen. Oh, sorry. As a part of, so I'm hearing these comments about streamlining, especially for smaller organizations, but I've also heard you offer help. So could you put it into context for us? What is it that the smaller organizations might be struggling with? And also, are they required to produce a budget? Anybody who wants to comment, comment. Got two people, okay. We'll go public and then private.
Hi. So good question. You know, in January when we have the workshops, we help applicants understand what we're looking for. We can't coach them and tell them how to write an application, but we can help coach them and understand how they can get points for the work that they're going to do. So it would be really nice, you know, if folks felt that they were struggling in the program, if they would attend the workshop. But even if they're not able to do that, whether it's in person or online, give us a call. This mm-hmm. team, we love what we do. We love to help. We just had a bunch of grant administration workshops that were live on 4 different days, helping people understand how to manage their projects, giving them a heads up and advice and guidance. And we continue to create tools like that. So we have even videos online helping with environmental compliance and that type of thing. But if there's something that we're missing in the way of support, we'd love to know that. You know, we'd love to know what else we can help create to support people applying. Because we agree nonprofits are very important, and we see the work that they do. And especially with, you know, what happens with shutdowns and that type of thing, they're even more important at times, right? So yeah. We would do
anything we could to make it easier for all of the eligible applicants to apply for our program. You asked about a budget.
Yes.
Within the application itself, they submit a project cost estimate. And so that's basically a guidance to us when they're applying, showing us what they need for their project. Mm-hmm. At prelim, we give them comments and guidance, making sure that they adhere with the regulations. And then, you know, that's their budget moving forward. But they do have the option to move funds around once they're awarded, and we'll work with them as well because we definitely see, you know, things happening that can impact projects. So I've definitely seen in the last 8 years more support tools, you know, helping agencies. So, you know, again, we're open to any ideas if we're missing anything that could be available.
Okay. Quick comment. Thank you, Jessica and Kat. I'm thinking what I heard in terms of Ted Cabral's concern is that we look into a different criteria for smaller groups versus federal. Are we hearing that correctly? Like a standard or a different scale?
Yeah, and I was thinking the same thing when he was talking about that as well, but you know, a lot of that statute-based, I've worked on the regulations before, and I know that, you know, things like what match percentage and you know, they have to have and that type of thing is all built into statute, but we could definitely take a look at it and see, you know, if there's any opportunities. We're actually, over the last couple of years, we've been working on making the criteria, which are the questions and statements that they answer to apply. We want to make them easier to understand. So I've been on a team that's worked on developing the language, and it's something that we have planned in the future to, you know, have it in a regulations package. So just kind of a combination of making sure we stay true to the statute, but also make it easy for folks to apply to the program.
Okay, thank you. Ted, did you have anything, or Don, who's my private spokesperson for a moment?
So just for example, and it's not just OHV groups complaining about the regulatory burden of these things. It's Ryan Henson with the California Wilderness Coalition up in Redding. He would love to get out in the field and do some conservation work, but they simply don't have the staff available to administer the grant. Now, a few years ago, we had some meetings with parks, and I appreciate that, but just this is just sort of a rough example. Let's say in 2020, there were 35 pages that had to be filled out for the grants, for a grant. After our meetings, the grant staff came back and said, look, we've improved the grant process. It's now 50 pages. So instead of simplifying, I'm not, you know, it's sort of funny, sort of a joke, but, you know, we're asking for a paper reduction, not an increase, you know, filling out forms and check boxes, and even though they are very helpful, there's not small nonprofits and even Forest Service units with their staffing right now. The person that would go out and oversee, say, a culvert replacement or putting an OHV bridge, they can't go out and administer that or work on that project because they would have to spend the time administering the grant. They just don't, there's just not the staff, and it needs to be made a little simpler.
May I ask? I think one of the issues from a legal standpoint is that we've had problems, you know, with some financial dealings over the years where people are not really complying with the rules. So would it help if these smaller groups are not purchasing equipment and handling, and all they're using the money for is to get people, you know, onto the ground? Is that part of the problem? Because one of the reasons that, you know, one of the things that happens with these grants is that every time we have somebody who misbehaves, you know, we kind of grind it down another, you know, layer to get to make sure that they have less and less opportunity to, you know, not do the right thing. So would that help? I mean, are those groups, are they still needing to purchase equipment and things like that? Because if they are, I'll just identify from the legal side of things, that's really the problem, is the financial management of a lot of these, from a legal standpoint, and I'm not saying from the grants standpoint. So do you have a response to that, Ted?
There's times when there's need for equipment, and I think, I mean, just really realistically, that's a great question, and there's a lot of great questions that we have here. And I think what needs to be done is we have a grants program that was developed many years ago. A lot of things have changed, okay? When I was on the commission, I thought that at times there was too many fancy pieces of equipment being bought and not enough boots being put out in the ground. So I kind of had that. That was my own opinion. But I think that maybe what would be possible, and this year it's probably too late because I know they've got their hands full, and they do a wonderful job. I want to be clear that the grant staff does a great job. But maybe having a workshop that's based around looking at potential for the future, how to adjust this program. You know, there's AI tools that can be used now that can be possible for the organizations to be able to streamline the process. I'll use one example, though, that is a common one that I've run into with volunteer work with federal agencies, specifically the Forest Service. They don't have the person on staff to be able to give the stamp to the soil standards, to be able to comply with the soil standards on the latest grants. And a lot of times they just don't, that office or that region, they don't have it. Or the people are out on detail, on a fire detail or something. So it just makes it's cumbersome, especially when you get to the smaller organizations. So I think just maybe putting some fresh eyes and fresh concepts to this program, and then maybe being able down the road to address it with some legislation and statute would probably be the best way forward. But maybe if you guys can come up with executive staff can come up with a process so we can all be involved in it and give you our feedback. Would be good.
Thank you. And I just wanted to add, I love the back and forth that's happening here because I really want us to engage in problem solving. One of the things that I'm experiencing on a different commission that I sit on is we're looking at the size of grants, and there might be a smaller packet required for smaller grants because those are usually run by these really undersourced entities that don't have a lot of experience, but they know that they're going to have a lot of volunteers come out, and they just need, like Ted said, boots on the ground. And so we should really look at these entry-level projects and make it easier for folks, because they are helping us. They're making us extend our resources, and I really would like to bring down as many barriers as possible to make these partnerships happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like to the point that Catherine brought up, Mr. Bias, is that maybe there shouldn't be such a focus on equipment, and I'd like to see some of the people that are volunteering actually get paid for their drive time as far as, you know, the fuel and maybe their lunch, their food. I mean, if that could be accessible, go on that route. So the volunteers, it's one thing to, you know, go volunteer for a day or two, but it's another thing to end up paying $250 or something for the opportunity to volunteer and just the back-end expenses. So if there was a way that could be accounted for and then reimbursed, that would be wonderful. And then maybe we can lean off a little bit on the equipment. And then also, I mean, I certainly think that the construction costs and the cost of living stuff that I brought up earlier, that's got to be addressed. I mean, the number we're throwing out there is not adequate anymore. It needs to be raised. It's just bottom line. So anyway, I've taken enough time.
Thank you. Commissioner Renya?
All right. Well, I have tons of questions. First of all, I did this grant maybe 7 years ago, and I remember that for safety and education, the percent, because it's broken up in percentages, correct? So for safety education, there's only 3% or 5%?
There's 5%, and that is a statute stipulation, so it's not something that we can change within division.
Correct. So with that 5%, and because I'm going to address this for safety education because that's the grant that I had applied for, I also had a lot of difficult time because the grants meeting is in January. So in January, you have to have pretty much everything ready so you can submit it in March. If you work in a municipality, it takes you about a month just to get an LSR to get it to your legal so they can approve it so that the city council can say, go ahead and write it. So then here comes March and you're writing it in a hurry so they can submit it in March. I think part of the problem that I know that I was having was that the summit should be held like in October so we have enough time to ask the partners that are going to be part of this idea or whatever we're going to be putting together so that we can have the councils and the players or the partners that are going to be part of it, and it makes it a lot easier for the grantee to write this grant. But you only have a month to try to get all those LSRs through council, and then you have to get the matching grant with staffing. You got to get to your finance director to see how you can match this grant. That was my problem. But, I mean, we made it, but it was, and then once you get the grant, then to facilitate it and fly this giant grant. I see the problem because I'm looking at the amount that was allocated for just safety and education. And one of the biggest things that we've been talking about in the last few years is safety and education. And I know it's by statute. I think the percentage should be higher, especially for this area. After COVID, everybody has a side-by-side, an ATV or a motorcycle. So we need more safety lessons. Rural communities need to start partnering up with schools, tribal groups, because there are no tribal grants given out here. And I know there's tribes out there that don't know about these grants. So how are we educating the indigenous people about these possibilities and these grants?
I wish Sean was here today because we've had a few meetings with Sean as well as some folks that he has pointed us to. Mainly, there's a group called CITAN, I believe it's C-I-T-A-N. It's a large network of tribal community folk. So we have met with them. They plan to come to the workshop, at least they did when we spoke last, mm-hmm. so that they can help share that information out to the tribes. And I also met with another gentleman, which I cannot remember his name today, to talk because he had a tribe that was potentially interested, and so we shared information. I offered to set up a meeting with him. So we're definitely working to get more information out to the tribes. Jessica is our division's tribal liaison, so she also works with the cultural resources staff to get information out that way as well.
And I agree with everyone else in this room. You guys have a phenomenal staff. You're always there when we call. You are there on the phone, and you gave us the answer, and then we would have to call our agency. Well, I can't get you that for the next 2 weeks. And you're struggling trying to figure out, well, how do I finish from the day I have my meeting with you guys in January to get this input into the Olga system, because at 5 o'clock that thing just shuts down. And if you miss something, you're just like, well, you're out of luck. So I just don't know if maybe we should move the grants meetings a little bit earlier instead of January, so it gives rural communities or municipalities an opportunity to get all their paperwork in order, because then you request a resolution, and that also has to go through councils or either county or cities as well. But small little nonprofits are having that difficulty because they don't have the staff. Not only are they writing the grants, but they're also doing the grant and then have to report the grant. So it gets really tedious. And that's just one grant, because that's how we survive, is writing grants all the time. And we got to have the appropriate staff to do that. So, yes, maybe more money for staffing in some of these grants, but you do need material, especially in the safety and education area. My next question is that with SB 563, you know, with the new special districts, how is that going to affect your law enforcement agencies here? Is that going to be an issue?
They would go in with the local law enforcement. So,
like a partnership?
No, they would be an eligible applicant in the local section for law enforcement if the bill is passed.
So then that would be added to the pie. The competition would be a little bit stricter for law enforcement?
It's a non-competitive category. Uh-huh. It's a proportional basis. So the proportion of funds that potentially would be given out to each agency would be less if there are more additional applicants. But that can happen without the bill going through. With the bill going through, it all depends on how many folk happen to apply each cycle in the local. That's the only one that doesn't have, like, the Forest Service has their patrol district, so they always know how many people are applying.
Well, you have a very difficult job when you have to figure out which agencies are going to get the funding. I'm just, like I said, concerned that more money is going to be added when we don't have an increase in the trust fund. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Lemon?
Hey, just want to make sure, full disclosure, I know Vicki asked me at the very beginning of the meeting if anyone was here. One of my neighbors just showed up, and I don't know what the protocol is, having someone else in, I guess, technically the room, if I could get some direction on that.
Commissioner Lemon, excuse me, it's really a disclosure issue, so all you have to do is say that I have somebody else there. Does that make sense?
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
And then just as a quick comment on grants, great presentation. Thanks for all you guys do. And I don't disagree with Commissioner Arena in her assessment that maybe earlier in the year might be prudent.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Ross Leach.
Yeah, thank you for the update on the grants and what you're trying to do. I agree with all the comments people are making. It's challenging, I'm sure. I'm just wondering, you're mentioning, like, we have to do this because of statute. Can we change the statutes? Is that how difficult is that to do?
That's a legislative change that we cannot initiate within parks, so it has to be done outside of that.
Hmm. So we can have a partner or a friend do that, someone we work with.
They can't get into that. The parks can't initiate, so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I agree wholeheartedly with Commissioner Urania about the federal tribes, and I'm really glad to hear that you were getting some knowledge and help from Sean. And having the workshop scheduled for Reading, it seems like a great opportunity as well to specifically reach out to tribes that are in that area to, a special invitation or something, just to see if we can get more interest and maybe some grants to them. Thank you.
No problem. We can do that.
Any other commissioners have comments or questions on this item? Thank you very much.
Chair.
Appreciate you guys.
Chairman.
Sorry, yes, Director Quintero.
Thanks, everybody, for all of the comments. And I just, one of my favorite statements about problems is that oftentimes there isn't a silver bullet, and what you need is silver buckshot. Literally. I mean, so I think a lot of things were mentioned that were really helpful. And one of the things that I thought about is that we talked about the the conservation corps in California, and having regional groups partner with your conservation corps is a very powerful way to apply for grants. And I'll also say that the work that all of the grants folks do in state parks is very much an open door, available on the phone sort of business. And in the 5 years that I've been in this role, I have talked to many community members where they've had a single person on their staff that could handle grants, and they were able to get grants because of the way they worked really closely with the teams. And I'll even say that this last year, Sarah and I had a series of phone calls with the regional director of a major agency that has gotten grants from us, and they were mad that they didn't get everything they asked for. And we told them, well, guess what? There were better applications than yours. And it was really interesting because at the end of it, this director of an agency said, so what you're saying is that we have to work more closely with your staff and do a better application next year? I was like, yep. So there's that. But the other thing that I also want to say, because you brought up several issues, I'm not sure if this commission is aware that state parks has 54% of state park lands under co-management agreements with tribes. Our cultural resources team has worked across the state. So with the tribal liaison, we already have an incredible network amongst the tribal groups. And obviously, it's an easy thing to bring up this as a topic if it hasn't been raised already. So anyway, there's other things that come to mind, but I really value all of the comments. And also, we share the same frustrations. We have to put in budget requests for the funding that we do get. That's approved by the legislature, so we don't have a lot of flexibility there with what they will approve. But anyway, the really, the grants teams in state parks are really powerhouses, and they're powerhouses that work wonderfully with applicants. And I look forward to hearing how this all goes. Thank you guys for your work.
Thank you, Director. Now moving on to item 11, Strategic Planning and Recreational Services Update. I'd like to introduce Alex Stell, Deputy Director for Strategic Planning and Recreation Services, to provide a Strategic Planning and Recreation Services Update, which will include A, the General Strategic Planning Update, and B, the Senate Bill 155 Update.
Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning. Alex Stell, Deputy Director, Strategic Planning and Recreation Services Division. This might be the shortest report ever. I think your introduction might be longer than my report itself. And congratulations on this meeting. Good morning is always nice to say. There are two general plan revisions, projects currently underway for SVRAs, Hungry Valley and Ocotillo Wells. The Ocotillo Wells general plan is about 75% complete, and the planning team will publish the notice of preparation for the environmental impact report in January. We'll also relaunch the project webpage, as well as advertise the comment period, public comment period in newspapers, anybody who participated in any of the meetings and signed up for any announcements. And the project is expected to be completed in February of 2027, so there'll be a one-year cycle for that, and we're looking forward to having that wrapped up. Next slide, please. The second effort, which I'm happy to announce, is Hungry Valley's draft general plan and final EIR, which will be brought to the Commission at your first meeting in 2026 in February. The general plan and EIR will be posted on the Commission webpage and the project webpage at the end of January for public and Commission review. So we're looking forward to getting that wrapped up as well. Next slide, please. And so a little update on our SB 155, the OHV Access Initiative. It's currently in its second phase. The first phase was wrapped up in June. Since then, OHMVR and Strategic Planning Divisions have been working together with a team of subject matter experts, which included OHV enthusiasts, to create an evaluation tool, establish criteria to process the over 70-plus projects that we received through that first effort. And that tool has been completed, and now that same team is in the process of working through all those projects, evaluating and prioritizing those that will reach out to partners and property owners to select for the next phase of doing feasibility studies and implementation, which we're hoping to get done by the summer. So we are quite on track for that and happy to make those updates. That is the end of this staff report.
Wonderful. Yep. That was quick. Jeez. All right. Well, we're going to begin then with in-person public comments on this agenda item. We'll begin with Sherry Stortran. How you doing, Sherry?
Hi there, Commissioners. Sherry Stortran, 35-plus-year Jeep owner, operator, volunteer my entire life. Just want to mention that SB 155 was passed into law around September 23rd, 2021, or thereabouts. That's approximately 1,460 days since the passage. Did a little research, and Section 5090.42, it was to be added to the Public Resources Code to read, for purposes of this section, land means the land known as the Alameda-Tesla expansion area, which encompasses approximately 3,100 acres in the county of Alameda and is currently part of the Carnegie SVRA area. This is just to paraphrase some of these subsections. B1, this subsection basically said the land shall not be designated as a state vehicular recreation area as defined in Section 5090.14.1. Number two is also paraphrased here. $1 million shall be transferred from the general fund to the state park and recreation funds. It goes on to there. Again, Section C1, $29,800,000 shall be transferred from the general funds to the off-road vehicle trust fund pursuant to Section 38225 of the vehicle code. Goes on to basically say to acquisition and development properties to expand off-highway vehicle recreation. Where am I going with this, you say? My concern is, or concerns are, I should say, it's been 1,460 days since SB 155 was passed. No replacement properties for the Alameda Tesla expansion area to date. At previous OHMVR meetings, I heard things like, we might not have enough funds, ouch. Or at previous OHMVR meetings, I've heard and seen massive amounts of California acreage that we can't have OHV located in. I have even heard buying things like buffer zones as a way of protecting existing SVRAs and OHV under attack, and possibly even the purchase of e-moto areas. Again, that doesn't enhance my OHV opportunity. I just want to say that in ending, after last night's results of Sacramento County Board of Supervisors, I think it's more important than ever to try to find a replacement for this land. And I would just encourage the commissioners, don't take my word for these sections, read them. It really says to expand off-highway vehicle recreation. And I want to see that. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Sherry. Ted Cabral. Don Amador.
Pass.
Rose Wynn.
Good morning again. So I'm going to speak to Prairie City again. It does have to do with planning. In the EIR process, there is supposed to be consistency in planning between the developments taking place adjacent to an SVRA and the planning documents that we have very diligently prepared. And one of the areas in which the FEIR for the Coyote Creek solar development was fatally flawed is that it has zero consistency with our wildlife habitat protection plan. Knowing what we've invested in conserving and protecting wildlife and natural resources within our SVRA, it is unconscionable that their environmental analysis would exclude that consistency in full. Particularly given the very high-value natural resources that are right there. We have foregone expansion of Prairie City in the interest of not imposing further harm on natural resources on the northern side of Prairie City. So we should be just as conscientious about imposition of destruction of natural resources to the south and east of Prairie City. And it's your role to ensure that that consistency happens. Additionally, the FEIR only referenced the draft road and trails plan. It did not provide consistency with the final version of the road and trails plan, which is not just a procedural flaw. That's something that should have stopped the EIR from moving forward to certification. And again, this is in your role to ensure that these things are addressed. Other deficiencies that directly impact the park include failure to adequately analyze the traffic and glare hazards. There are significant public safety hazards that are created by the construction of this project, and there are significant components of that that were either silent or very lightly acknowledged without actually being addressed within the EIR. And so, again, we need you to address those things on our behalf. And so, with that, there's other things, too. I really could go on about this for a very long time. But the EIR is so flawed that the county's document does not provide you what is needed to complete CEQA to move forward with approval of a discretionary grant of easement. And that item alone is enough and should substantiate not granting that easement. By not granting the easement, it's not like you're singularly putting the kibosh on that whole project. You're simply asserting where inaccuracies, deeply legally and procedurally flawed inaccuracies, cannot be proceeded to allow you to approve that grant. So I would ask you to please look into those things. And then on the Hungry Valley SVRA general plan update, I just had a great conversation with Alex. I look forward to carrying forward conversations we've had on how language in our planning documents can be strengthened to further protect the OHV activities and interests at our SVRAs in balance with our natural resource and other park protections.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Okay. Do we have any online comments?
Yes, we do. We have one. We'll start with Stephen Gierstad. Stephen, you may unmute and begin your comments.
Thank you. I have a comment related to the off-highway vehicle access initiative. You know, I heard some about this, about the planning for some projects related to the access initiative, basically linking existing OHV areas, I think, to provide corridors between existing ones. And, so I've gone to the Access Initiative website at parks.ca.gov. And, you know, if you scroll down about maybe two-thirds of the way, what's new, it says try out our new OHV existing conditions map tool. There's a link there. If you link to that, when I link to that, I scroll to the area where my property is located, and there's a legend on the side, and it says USFS land. It's kind of purple, BLM teal, state parks is kind of an orange color, municipal is yellow, and private is purple. My land exists in that area. It appears as a tan color. It has no legend associated with it. And throughout, right below the land ownership pattern, there's something called an OHV trails area, which is a hashed area. My property appears as part of that hashed area. So, you know, I strongly dispute the notion that my property is an OHV trail area. And, you know, this is basically just an uncompensated taking, which is prohibited both by the Takings Clause in the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and it's prohibited under Section 1, Article 19 of the California Constitution. It also could be considered slander of title. You are representing to the public that my property is, in effect, yours and yours to designate for OHV activity. I mean, we've been through this in so many ways, so many times, but just with regard to whether this is going to go away, I mean, I would just refer you to the Bagley-Keene Act about public participation in meetings. Some people have expressed to me that they don't want me here in these meetings, like David Kusky, but, you know, I have a statutory right to be here. I have a statutory right to express my objections to these conditions, and I'm going to continue to do so as long as you have OHV routes on my property and trespass continues to occur on it. So, you know, thanks a lot, and, you know, hope you want to do something.
All right, Stephen, thank you for your comments. Chair Salazar, that was the only comment online.
Okay. Alex? Sure.
I believe if you don't have my contact information, we can get that over to you, but you're more than welcome to send me your property information. That map is a bird's eye view. It is not meant to define any property lines. It is, you know, it's very difficult when you zoom in. There's always, with GIS, there's always going to be some buffers that overlay. We have no intent of taking anyone's private property for OHV access or enhancements without their participation. So we will, if you want to send me your information, I can drill down into that map and see if we can correct that so that it sways some of your concerns. Thank you for your comment.
All right. After hearing all public comments, I'll formally close the public comment period and get any comments from the commissioners. Commissioners? Anyone? Nope. All right. So no, hearing no, thank you very much for Alex for the update. We are now going to move to item 12, which is administrative items. Item 12A is the commission meeting dates for 2026. So I'll introduce Vicky Perez, commission clerk, to provide the approved commission meeting dates for 2026.
You want to go up there?
What? Oh, so yeah.
Good morning, commissioners. How are you?
Awesome.
Okay. The proposed meeting dates for 2026 are as follows. February 25, 26, that potentially would be the Hungry Valley meeting. June 17, 18 would be the OHV Safety Summit, location to be determined. August 6th and 7th, 2026 would be the Sierra Trek. Please note that the meeting would be on Thursday and the field trip would be on Friday. And the final meeting in 2026 would be November 18, 19.
And that's also TBD location?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Vicki. We'll move now to item 12B, the chair and vice chair elections for 2026. Again, we'll continue with this administrative action item. And just before we begin that, I just sort of want to say, you know, I think I mentioned in the last meeting that I was not going to run for re-election as chair. I am sort of, again, I thank you for, again, for the honor of allowing me to serve as chair of this commission. I'm proud of sort of the improved partnership, I think, with, you know, with the off-road community, you know, that has resulted over the last few years. I'm proud that I was able to keynote the Cal Four Wheel Convention, the Corva Convention, meet with LEOs, in and around the state, and keep focused on policies that that improve access for off-road recreation. So it's again, it's been an honor serving as chair. So right now we're gonna go ahead and hear and open the floor for nominations. We're gonna start with vice chair, we're gonna go in that direction. And I'll kick off the nominations. I'd like to nominate Kat Anderson as vice chair. Kat spent nearly a decade as a SF Parks and Recreations Commissioner. She's a certified climate steward. She's a law degree. She's an attorney and specialized in labor law. She's been a fantastic addition. She was appointed to this commission in 2023. So I'd like to nominate Kat Anderson as vice chair. Are there any other nominations? All right. Does that need a second, or is that just a?
I'll second.
Who seconded?
Both of us.
All right, you have 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. If there are no more nominations for the office of vice chair, we'll close the nominations and proceed to elect the vice chair. Again, are there any further nominations?
Chair, before yes. We do that, could we just maybe do a little quick bio on each one of these people that are being nominated? When I called everybody, I thought maybe it'd be nice to do a little background so the community knows who we're appointing. And our upcoming vice chair told me to let everybody know she's a fifth generation Californian, and originally she's from Arkansas. And she spent a lot of time, her time camping, hiking, canoeing, boating, and water skiing. She also befriended the Clintons. You remember, she babysat Chelsea. Maybe you should invite her to one of our meetings. Upon returning to California, okay. Kat became an experienced backpacker and horseback rider and is proficient at operating motorcycles and off-road vehicles. Kat is a California certified climate steward trained to meet and talk with communities where they are to discuss what needs to be done. She just recently got appointed as the president of the San Francisco Parks and Recreation Commission, correct?
I've been doing it for about 2 years now.
Yeah. Oh, she's an OG then. Okay, she's been there for a while now. Other than that, I'm happy to see that we've nominated you for the vice chair, and we have a second.
Yep.
Thank you.
And are there, again, I just need to ask procedurally if there are any further nominations for the office of vice chair. If there are no more, we will close the nominations to proceed to elect a vice chair. So, again, are there any further nominations? All right, hearing no further nominations, nominations for the office of vice chair are closed. The nominations for vice chair are Kat Anderson. Do you want to make a statement, Kat?
Oh, thank you. This is an incredible honor. It feels kind of fast. But this is a very wonderful group of people to work with. And first of all, I wanted to thank Chair Salazar, Roger, for being such a great leader, and Pat before him. Not only do you have great compassion for the issues here, and there are many nuances to these issues, but you really live and breathe OHV. It's really fun to hear about your many adventures, especially out on the Rubicon Trail, and I know that you have a deep commitment to certain things, like the Law Enforcement Task Force, for example, and I think there's something you want to name out on the Rubicon Trail. Is that right?
That's right.
So I'm really glad that you're staying on the commission, too. I feel really lucky to be here. My number one OHV activity is horseback riding. And on October 24th, out at Prosser Creek in the Tahoe or Truckee area, I was thrown from my horse named Bon Bon. And I did a sort of a half somersault off the back of this animal, and I could have landed on rocks, and it could have been really bad. And instead, I landed in the creek, which softened the blow but froze me to death. And being the person that I am who doesn't like to make waves, I got back on the horse and insisted that we finish the ride for the next 90 minutes, and I was in excruciating pain and even suggested we eat lunch afterwards. And the reason why I did that is because I was going through this mental exercise that life is not always comfortable. And sometimes we do things because it must be done. And it just builds character to dig deep and roll up your sleeves and engage in things that aren't always easy. And that is what we do on this commission. And I really commend the OHV community here, and I want to do everything I can to make sure that we have access while continuing to be sensitive to environmental issues and to the needs of our communities. So thank you so much for this vote of confidence, and I'm really, really proud to be a part of this team.
Thank you. Commissioner Yanni, you had a comment?
Just wanted to say, well, probably at the end, we want to say a little something about you too, Chair.
All right, we'll hold off on that for a second.
Yes.
All right, so again, I guess we can do a roll call now. So Vicki, do you want to?
Commissioner Anderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson, aye. Commissioner Flanagan is not present. Commissioner Lemon?
An enthusiastic aye.
Commissioner Lemon, enthusiastic aye. Commissioner Mueller?
Aye.
Commissioner Mueller, aye. Commissioner Randall?
Aye.
Commissioner Randall, aye. Commissioner Ross Leach?
Aye.
Commissioner Ross Leach, aye. Commissioner Urania?
Proud to have her as our vice chair? Aye.
Commissioner Urania, a proud aye. Commissioner Petrovsky?
Aye.
Commissioner Petrovsky, aye. Commissioner Salazar?
Aye.
Commissioner Salazar, aye. Motion passes 8-0.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
All right. We will now move. We'll open the floor for nominations for the office of chair.
Chair?
Go ahead.
I'd like to nominate Diane Ross Leach for the chair position for the OHMBR.
And I would like to second that.
Okay. Any other nominations for the office of chair?
Pardon me, Chair. Who was the second? Was it Commissioner Anderson?
Urania. Commissioner Anderson, sorry. If there are no more nominations for the office of chair, we'll close the nominations and proceed to elect the chair. Are there any further nominations? Hearing no further nominations for the office of chair, the nominations for the office of chair are closed. So the nominations for chair are Diane Ross Leach. Do you want to make a statement?
Let me just say that Commissioner Ross Leach was reappointed in 2024 by Assembly Speaker Rivas for her second term. Seems like three terms. She retired in 2018 or 16 with 18 with the public PG&E, and currently is the National Audubon is on the Audubon Board, California State Parks Foundation Board, and past chair of the CSPF board, and we're proud to have you as our chair, Ms. Diane Ross-Leach, and I know you come with copious amounts of experience in speaking and writing for us and just being there for all these ad hoc commissions. We want you on all our ad hoc commissions because you engage very well, so congratulations.
Commissioner Anderson?
We haven't had a vote yet, though.
No, we haven't had a vote yet. Okay, Commissioner Anderson?
I'd like to add an anticipation of your win. Diane is a California native as well. She graduated from Berkeley with a landscape architecture degree, which I think really helps us because she is really well informed about, you know, how land and the plants on it are affected by the things that we do. She's passionate about environmental stewardship and worked on many environmental initiatives in her former career before retirement. I find Diane to be knowledgeable, wise, fair, and balanced. She really is very thoughtful about the subtle intricacies of what we're trying to achieve here in OHV, and she understands the history of how OHV was brought together by an OHV enthusiast and an environmentalist, and I feel like Diane has really exemplified that fair balance. She gives great consideration to the people and the cultures and the OHV community. And she's also a lot of fun. In September, when we were at meetings in Reading, she and I went out to the MacArthur Burney Falls Memorial State Park, one of our beautiful parks with a waterfall there and a great history. And we really enjoyed what we experienced there and getting to know one another. So I think that we can all have great confidence in her leadership, and I really hope that everyone will vote for Diane.
All right, thank you. Diane, do you have any statement you'd like to make?
Sure, I appreciate being nominated. I've been on the commission for a while, and I've certainly learned a lot. I've made it plain that I'm not an OHVer, but I've learned a lot about OHV and how state parks manage them and plan for them and do a lot of important things to protect the resources as well as allow, you know, people to recreate. And I think it's been interesting with the Coyote Creek project that by having the environmental folks learn about SVRAs, they had no idea about how much, you know, resource protection, all the planning that goes into managing the parks. And so that was a great experience to have that happen. And I guess, you know, I always try to set a goal for myself in some kind of leadership position. So some of my goals are having more engagement with the commissioners, making sure that we have 100% attendance at our meetings and that we do utilize our ad hoc committee meetings more so that we can have more interaction in between the commission meetings. I know I've heard from people, you know, in our community saying, you know, what happens between the meetings? Do you do anything? And so I think I want to show that we are working on these different things in between commission meetings. So I appreciate the nomination. I really thank you, Roger, for your leadership as well, and Ed, and showing the way. So
thank you. All right. So we'll now take a roll call vote. Vicki?
Commissioner Anderson.
Aye.
Commissioner Anderson, aye. Commissioner Flanagan is not present. Commissioner Lemon.
Another enthusiastic aye, and it's great to see women lead.
Commissioner Lemon, another enthusiastic aye. Commissioner Mueller.
Aye.
Commissioner Mueller, aye. Commissioner Randall.
Aye.
Commissioner Randall, aye. Commissioner Ross-Leach.
Aye.
Commissioner Ross-Leach, aye. Commissioner Urania.
Totally excited, aye.
Commissioner Urania, totally excited, aye. Vice Chair Petrovsky.
Aye.
Vice Chair Petrovsky, aye. Chair Salazar.
Aye.
Chair Salazar, aye. Motion passes 8-0.
All right. Congratulations, you guys. I also want to thank Vice Chair Petrovsky for serving as Vice Chair these last couple of years. And, you know, again, it's always sort of great to get your insight, you know, and, you know, given your history and the work that you've done in the past, it's always appreciated to, you know, to learn about sort of all of the actions and activities you did as a ranger and in your other work that you did. So appreciate you very much.
I appreciate being elected twice as vice chairman, and thank you.
Just a reminder, commissioners, that the duties of chair and vice chair will become effective January 1, 2026.
Wonderful. Commissioner Rain, you had some comments?
Yes. I also just wanted to say thank you so much for leading us this year, Chair Salazar. I got to ride on your huge number 7 Jeep?
Jeep
never
number 7,
been on
yet.
Those rocks in my life. I still want to go to the Rubicon one of these days.
Let's do it.
And yeah, let's do that. But thank you for going to all those visits and standing there and representing the OHMBR. And Mr. Petrosky, I enjoy having breakfast with you and just talking about your time with BLM. I learned so much more about what you did and how you continue to advocate for, you know, the federal government and the state and all our local programs. So thank you for your continued work, and love seeing you here at every meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. And just to be clear, I'm not going anywhere. So I've got projects that I'm working on, so I'm going to keep pushing for the stuff that we're doing. So again, thank you. Item 13 is closed session. As previously mentioned, there will not be a closed session for this meeting. So we move to item 14, which is adjournment. This Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Recreation Commission meeting is hereby adjourned. I look forward to seeing you all again at the next commission meeting in the first quarter of 2026. Is that a record?
Happy holidays.
Record.